21st Century HR is a podcast exploring how to build better businesses through modern people practices and approaches. It's brought to you by my firm, Amplify. Amplify provides HR executive search and strategic consulting services that help companies build better organizations. From employer brand development and execution to global talent strategies, Amplify develops custom solutions that help clients from Hootsuite to SpaceX optimize their recruiting capabilities. Amplify also hosts a new community for HR leaders called the Ecosystem. The Ecosystem was designed to bring modern HR leaders around the world together to share ideas, inspiration, and support. Learn more at amplifytalent.com. Welcome to Season 3 of 21st Century HR Live. This is Episode 1. And in this conversation, I spent some time with the head of remote for GitLab, Darren Murph. This is a recording of a live discussion we had on Monday, April 20th. And as this was the inaugural episode, of course, I botched the beginning of the audio. So we're going to pick up this podcast about 7 minutes into our discussion. And I'm going to turn it over now to Darren.
Sure. And I think that's going to pay dividends for companies down the road. So we're in an interesting time where some companies are starting to build proper infrastructure and some who are a little less remote fluent, as I say, are still kind of struggling to stabilize.
Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, one of the things that was really interesting when we had our first conversation planning actually for the original podcast, and we talked about, you know, the differences between fully remote and fully distributed companies and hybrid. And I think, you know, you see a lot of, even pre-COVID-19, you saw a lot of hybrid environments where you had some people that were remote, some people that were on site. You had lots of different kind of complications associated with, you know, really two classes of employees.
Yes.
And you shared some interesting feedback around, like, even in those hybrid environments, creating opportunities where if you have people all in a room, instead of looking at a giant screen, they should be bringing their laptops and looking at that. So I'm curious, as companies start to think more about their return to work programs and policies and procedures, what are some of the things that they need to be thinking about to kind of make that transition seamless, in particular for the maybe large populations of their workforce who may be remote for, you know, a sustained period of time?
Yeah. The key here is to implement as many remote first practices as you possibly can, not just because this helps people that are remote now, but because it will help you be more effective and efficient, even if and when you do transition back to the office. And what I mean by that, the example that you were alluding to was this example of a meeting where you have five or six people in an office boardroom and then five or six people joining in. The right way to do this meeting is to have the six people in the office actually all open up their individual laptops and look into individual webcams so that you create a level playing field for the entire meeting party. And this is going to feel awkward for the people in the room, but that's entirely the point. I want the people in the room after the meeting to look at each other and say, how many hours did we spend commuting to do this in this room when clearly it wasn't necessary? This is kind of the mental unlocking of, can this really be done from anywhere? Does it really require us to be in an office? And for part of what I'm seeing is you're kind of seeing that myth break down. You've always been told that your job can't be done remotely, or this element of the job can't be done remotely. And then all of a sudden, it turns out it can, even in the worst of circumstances. So I'm actually pretty proud of humanity for how fast we've adapted in this. But think of how good this could be under normal times when you actually had time to prep and plan for this. So I would recommend for companies that are trying to look ahead 6 to 12 months, I don't think your workforce is ever going to look the same. You mentioned this, Lars, early on, where we've called remote the future of work, but now it's just the present. This is now just work. We can drop the whole future thing. There will be parts of your company that remain remote. And frankly, a lot of companies have already been remote. If you have an office in Singapore and an office in London, those subsets of people have always been remote to each other. So implementing remote first practices will help you thrive as a company, even if you have both of those subsets going back to the office. I mean, let's be honest, eventually you're going to do work on an airplane or at a hotel for a conference, so on and so forth. Remote has been a thing for a long time. We're now just being honest with ourselves on what it actually is. Another point I want to make here is this has kind of been a democratizing type of moment. Because I have long recommended to do remote right, what you should do is get all of the executives out of the office for a meaningful amount of time, at least a month, ideally a quarter. force them to have all of their meetings on Zoom, force them to document things that they may just verbalize to someone, to put discipline and intentionality behind the things that they're doing. And you'll start to see communication gaps, something that doesn't funnel up to the top or funnel back down to people that need this information. Document what those issues are. And when you're not in the office, there's no Band-Aid solution. You have to be intentional about making sure that your communication is rock solid and seamless all the way up and all the way back down. And now you're seeing leaders that have no choice. They are remote. And so they've something that's been a little bit uncomfortable for a lot of leaders are like, I don't know if I want to leave the office for a month. I really like the office. Well, now that they're there, it does present an opportunity for even leaders to kind of understand the mentality of the remoter and how things work and how things are different. The thing I'm most hopeful about, and we can dig into this later, is the shift from the scarcity mindset to the abundance mindset. So early on, you saw a lot of companies just grasping for stabilization. That's a scarcity mindset of, oh no, what can we not do because we don't have the office? But going forward, I think you're going to see a lot more positivity if you shift that a bit and say, what can we do in a virtual world now that we don't have the burden of the office? It's a mental shift, but I think there are a lot of leaders that are leaning into that. And now's a great time to do it because people want to fight for something. They want something to be positive about, and opening up opportunity to change the trajectory of your company right now. I mean, can't think of too many more things that would be, spark more positivity in the workplace.
Yeah, I think, you know, you raise a good point about, obviously this is a very kind of democratizing impact for companies where leaders and everybody is remote. And so if you had leaders who were old school or averse to remote for whatever reason, right? They just didn't think it fit their organization. They didn't think they could make it work. Well, guess what? Now you've got to make it work. Like this is the reality. And I think what'll be interesting is, you know, whenever we're on the other side of this and you're going to have all these employees who've had experience working remote successfully, who, you know, it's going to be hard to get them back in the office, you know, and that's not a sweeping statement for everybody. There's going to be some people that are, you know, crawling up the walls in their house. And the moment they have an opportunity to go back into an office and interact with other humans, they're going to jump all over that. But there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be like, well, wait a minute. You know, the argument against me being able to work remote was always, you know, productivity or meetings or communication or all those things. Well, guess what? Like I've been doing that for months and we've solved that. So what is it now, right? And I think companies to have a really honest look around how they're going to manage that.
I think there's two sides to that. First of all, I don't think you'll ever put this genie back in the bottle. To your point, you go 3 or 4 months and then you say, all right, everyone back to the office. People in mass are going to kind of collectively look at each other and say, hey, we just did our jobs for 3 or 4 months. We got all that commute time back. We saw our family more. We cooked more. We had more rest. We exercised more. I contributed less greenhouse gases. How about no, I'm not going to go back to the office. And then the second order of that is if they're living in a very expensive city where they're only there for work, once their lease runs out, they're going to start thinking about, oh, what are the possibilities if I decouple geography and work? What could that look like? Better air quality, more land, lower cost of living, better schools for my children. This ball is now rolling, and this is what remoters have understood for a really long time, but people that have just been very tightly tied, their identity has been very tightly tied to the office, it's been very difficult for them to see it. But now that that's been broken down, where there is no physical office happening in their life every day, it gives them that freedom to ask those questions. But even on the employer side, this makes a lot of sense. You're seeing a lot of companies have discussions right now on what can we do going forward to de-risk our business? Because now, regardless of our business fundamentals, we've been impacted by this. And you see some hotspots like Milan, for example, have been even more negatively impacted than maybe a place like Phoenix. To no fault of their own, they just happened to pick Milan for a headquarters, and that happened to be a hotspot for a global crisis. And now they're negatively impacted. The same could be said a few years prior for businesses based in London when they didn't see Brexit coming. Again, it had nothing to do with their business, but they were tied to a certain piece of geography, and now that impacts their business going forward. Remote is a great way to decouple where the work happens, the results, with geography. I actually spoke with a leader last week where they had two offices, around 100 people in each office, and they said, just from a real estate standpoint, we're going to close one. We're going to have about 80 seats left in one. We want to phase out of it. Some people are used to coming into the office. A lot of our clients want to come into the office. So we don't want to go hard stop right now. But we're closing one of them, which means that going forward, we have 120 people that will not have a desk. And they were doing this in part to force themselves to get remote right. They don't have an option. Like once the world gets back to normal, that significant chunk of their company does not have an office. So I think that's bold. I think forcing functions help GitLab stay honest. I mean, we can dive into this, but an example is we expire our Slack messages after 90 days to force us to not do work in Slack. This could be uncomfortable for new people coming in, but sometimes a forcing function is exactly the discipline you need. And I think what you're seeing, if you feel people squirming a little bit uncomfortable with this remote transition, part of it is just the crisis. It's weird. It's a weird time. But removed from that, part of it's going to be, I got to inject a lot of discipline in my company that may not have been there. And now there's no band-aid solution of let's just have a bunch of ad hoc meetings to bridge the communication gaps.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think especially the commercial real estate market, like that's going to be hammered, right? I mean, there's companies are not going to need the same space, and it's a massive cost item for businesses. And especially coming out of this, I think all companies now are much more kind of cost conscious. Obviously, they're tightening the belt. They're having layoffs. They're having reductions. They're not going to be eager to just go back into spending a giant check for a building that people aren't going to be spending time in. And the reality also is, I think when you look at how these social distancing guidelines, and one of the interesting things in that open source Google Doc I've been curating around business and HR comms, somebody contributed a document that was compiled by a bunch of mostly tech general counsels. And it went through all the different considerations that companies have to take into account when developing their return to work. And it's mind-boggling, the complexity, the scale, architecting the offices so that you can maintain social distancing. And yeah. I mean, there's just it's going to be a massive, massive undertaking to get employees back into the office. And so I think for a lot of them, that just won't happen. And if you joined the stream recently, this is an interactive Q&A. So if you have questions for Darren about anything and everything remote, wherever you're streaming this, feel free to add that in the comments section. I do have one question from LinkedIn from Osley, and she's wondering, and hopefully I pronounced that correctly, for companies, and this is more of an HR question, but you'll probably have a bit of a window into this, performance management, right? I think most companies have a degree of performance management structure within an organization. Typically for non-remote companies, you know, that's live, those check-ins are live, the meetings are live. Now there is no live, nobody is in an office. So how, like maybe just looking even at GitLab, how do you look at performance management at GitLab, given that you have employees that have, a long period of being, remote and not having any of those live meetings?
Yeah, this is a great awakening for performance management. And here's what I mean by that. I've often been asked, how do you know if employees are working remotely? And my immediate response is, how did you know they were working in the office? What I mean by this is the burden of management. This is the burden of leadership. It is not the direct report's burden to prove to you that they're working. There's been a lot of subjectivity in performance management in an office. You can go years building your career on likability. And in a remote setting, likability is not the top aspect. It's results. Results are the only thing that you can actually prove. So how do you get results? Well, it's on management and leaders to be very articulate and prescriptive about what is expected from organizations, from departments, and from individuals. How does all of that ladder back up? Shockingly, this has not been something with great hygiene for a lot of companies. So they're grappling with, we have to actually take a look at everyone in the organization and write down what a result looks like. That's a big burden for companies that have just kind of let that go. We're just generally, we have a vibe of we're moving in the right direction, or so-and-so is helpful, or so-and-so is useful. That's really not going to cut it. So in many instances, it's on the manager to go back and write down, this is what we expect to happen in this quarter or this half quarter or this year. And then have a one-on-one with the direct and say, is this clear? Do you have any blockers? In this new work environment where you don't have your typical office and IT infrastructure and access, do you need anything? Are you in a one-bedroom apartment where life is happening around you and maybe you need to expense a pair of noise-canceling headphones or a more ergonomic chair? All of these things now are very, very real. I've even recommended that companies be a lot more lax with reimbursements right now because, again, You may be moving them from a $3,000 to $10,000 cubicle space with an ergonomic chair, a standing desk, four or five monitors, kind of anything they need you can get from a warehouse, to home, where you have no idea what equipment they have access to. If you're expecting the same amount of productivity from someone kind of hunched over their kitchen table for a few months on end with one monitor and, you know, having to use their trackpad, it's going to be different. It's going to be different. And so, you know, at GitLab, we allow people to spend money to build the office based on their needs. And this is to some degree about accessibility, if you're mobility challenged and so on and so forth. These are the new considerations of the remote world. You may have not had to think about that outside of the office, and now you do. But on a performance management standpoint, obviously it's going to be different from company to company and even department to department. If you look at GitLab's engineering metrics, a lot of it is based on successful merge requests that were merged into our product pipeline. But if you look over in marketing and finance, the metrics are going to look different. Amount of media hits or amount of money saved. It's different per department, but it's something, and it's written down and it's understood and it's transparent. That's an action that leaders are going to have to take. If that is not written down, you won't have a good way to judge whether or not someone is performing. I would say the worst thing you could do right now is to implement spyware that opens up a webcam and takes a photo to make sure someone is in front of their computer, because being in front of your computer is not a good judge of performance. And so if that's the road you're running down, unless you have a great reason, I would say stop while you're ahead and try to get more prescriptive about what you need from your employees.
Yeah, let me underscore that because I know we've got a lot of HR leaders who are, you know, listeners and now I'd imagine viewers. Don't do spyware. Don't do spyware. Trust your employees. Trust your people. Trust the reality of this transition for a lot of them is incredibly difficult. So the moment you start big brothering them and adding that stress to what all the stress they're already carrying, like you're really damaging trust, and you know, you're going to end up costing not just productivity, but likely getting somebody to begin actively disengaging. So, you know, you want to avoid those steps, those kind of big brother steps. Let's talk a little bit about quarantine. You know, you've been working remote for years and years and years. You literally wrote the book on remote. So remote is nothing new to you. Quarantine kind of is. So how are you navigating to the idea that, like, you can't travel, you are kind of locked in. How are you making that adjustment? And then importantly, when we're on the other side of this, you know, we're back into normal times. What's your first trip? What's the place that you're dying to visit once you could get back on an airplane or travel however you want?
Yeah, quarantine is interesting. There are some silver linings. It gives me time to be a lot more introspective. I think there are a lot of people that appreciate this pause. We've been running about as fast as we could possibly run, maybe even a little too fast as a society. And so this is allowing us to pause and think about, you know, are there people in my life that I've kind of overlooked? Even my own family. Have I called my mom recently? I mean, just some of these basic things where we've been running so fast as a society with no way to pause, that this does give us pause. I mean, I've been really heartened by, I've had some friends that set up virtual double dates. So we'll agree on a set menu and we'll join Zoom at a certain time. And we have this double date. Even at GitLab, we have this new parenting channel where people can agree on schedules and then they turn their Zooms on and you'll have 30 or 40 kids from around the world speaking different languages to each other, showing off different toys. So you have this like six continent kid gathering that I don't think would have ever happened without COVID-19. So it's forcing some connection and innovation that I don't think would have happened. So that part of it has been good. The downside is I'm an avid traveler. For the past 10 years, I've traveled over 120,000 miles a year. I love to get out. I love to explore. I love to be home when I'm home. And then I love to go somewhere when I'm not home. And having no flights on the calendar is a bit eerie and strange for me. I'm used to going somewhere at least half of the month. So that has been disappointing. I look at this of these are moments that I won't get back. You know, it's been said that the average human life, if you tallied up the amount of weekends in your life, you could fit them all on the front and back sheet of one piece of paper. And that is not lost on me. It's like, you know, with each additional week that goes by that we're in this, like, oh, you know, I'm feeling it. But I do think even to that, there's a silver lining where you're now appreciating things you may have taken for granted. We were actually talking off air and prep for this, that I will be so excited to get back on an airplane, crammed in the last row before the restroom, in the middle seat with, you know, someone reclined in. I will be so excited. This is something that we, you know, we detested pre-COVID, but now we're like, yes, we're getting on an airplane, like free travel. We can go somewhere and explore somewhere on the other side of it. So that mental shift is kind of getting me through. So where am I excited to go? I'm hoping to go to Hawaii near the October, November. I was trying to go in August, which might still happen, but we might have to push it just a bit. I actually, my wife and I adopted a newborn at birth at the end of 2018. And so for anyone familiar with flying, you know, you get 2 years that the kid flies for free, and then you got to pay for a third seat. And this is our second year. And so I'm trying to get as many flights in by the end of the year to take advantage of that. Thankfully, we went on over 20 last year. So his quota is very high. But I am very much looking forward to flying again and to visiting a lot of friends that I have around the world. Zoom has been great. I'm glad that it exists. I mean, imagine if this had happened before the internet. We would all be stir crazy. But I do look forward to the day when I can hop on an airplane and experience a new place again. It's crazy that we're living in times where that's something you have to look forward to, but I am optimistic about it. And I think I heard someone say that we're going to see just the greatest outpouring of gratitude for the seemingly most mundane things that we've ever seen. And I do look forward to that. Like, people are going to celebrate delayed flights and cramped up flight seats. You know, it's one of those things that maybe we needed that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I remember ReclineGate, you know, not that long ago. I was on the interweb, so.
Yes.
So we have two quick rapid-fire questions. One was from David Garcia. I'm going to tackle this one. He asked about using VR for training right now. My response is, I think there's a lot of potential in VR for training. I think the limitation now, especially when people are remote and distributed, is hardware. You know, most average employees don't have a Oculus Go or some other hardware piece that they can use to actually experience the VR training. And those are not cheap, right? The prices are coming down, but they're not cheap. And so you can't just buy those for your employees, you know, and easily let them experience that kind of training. You kind of need them to, you know, experience that from a centralized location where you have the equipment, particularly if it's robust training and you need to be, you know, hardwired into a computer with the power necessary for kind of immersive VR. So I'm still bullish on the potential for VR. This probably pushes it back in my eyes, you know, a little bit, because again, I think the barrier to entry is the hardware that most people don't have. And then the second question, this one's for you, Darren. This is from Michael Vaughn. He was curious, was GitLab remote from day one? And if not, what was the decision, the trigger to make that transition?
It was remote from day one. The first three employees were in three different countries, so they had no choice but to be remote. They lived in different countries. There was this brief moment of time, though, when the company came to California. They went through Y Combinator, and it was the thing to do. You get an office coming out of Y Combinator. It lasted about 3 days, and then people just stopped showing up, and the work still got done, and they just let it go. So it was one of those things that they didn't intentionally leave the office, but it just didn't make any sense to keep going. People just stopped showing up. The work continued to get done. And so we sort of serendipitously fell into being remote. I think it's also really beneficial that the founders understood the recognition of documentation very early on to write everything down. Even if you have a team small enough that it's very easy to keep people on the same page, if you have a vision for scaling up, writing things down when there's not a lot to write down is going to pay massive dividends. I mean, now GitLab is over 1,200 people, and we still benefit from what was written down in month one. I mean, think about that. The amount of knowledge leaks that we've prevented because we were heavy on documentation is amazing. And I've talked to a lot of people that hear that and they understand that, and they get frustrated because they just think, oh, I wish I would have documented earlier. Look, there's no better time than today. Like, yesterday would have been better, and the day before that would have been a little bit better, but tomorrow is even worse. So start writing stuff down today, build a company handbook, start it as an FAQ, just answering some basic questions that people have across the remote landscape. And believe it or not, in 6 months, you'll have a shocking amount of content written down. At this point, GitLab's handbook is mostly just being iterated on. It's not like huge chunks of it still need to be written.
Yeah, and I would definitely, if you missed the beginning of the broadcast, Darren mentioned a lot of the free resources that GitLab has on all things remote, and it's a gold mine. So this is definitely one of the things that I leaned on heavily in developing some of the earlier pieces that I wrote for Fast Company and other publications around this transition. So Darren, what is the, for people that weren't on the beginning, what was the URL? Where can they find those resources?
Yep, you can go to allremote.info. And that will take you to the all remote section of GitLab's handbook, which, by the way, GitLab's handbook is all free and open source. It's over 5,000 pages if you printed it. It's how we do everything. You can even see our communications handbook. Feel free to copy and paste that if you're struggling with communication in your company. Take what's useful, discard the rest, change it up to be useful for your company. But allremote.info, right at the top, there's a remote playbook where we packaged up the best advice we have for suddenly remote companies. Easy to distribute ebook. We even have a newsletter. All of our best knowledge is there, really everything that we've learned from all remote meetings to how we work asynchronously to even how we hire and compensate people remotely. We try to share as much of that as possible because we believe that the more we can help proliferate remote companies, the rising tide is going to lift all boats. We want a world where we aren't the exception. We're something that's just normal. So whatever we can do to help normalize that, we want to do. And because it's on GitLab, if you have a suggestion for making it better, or you have a suggestion that you've seen in your company that you think GitLab could learn from, please make a merge request and assign it to me. I would love that.
It's open source at its best. And clearly I'm not wearing a hat, but this is a virtual hat tip to you and really the whole team at GitLab. You guys have all been amazing at open sourcing your resources and information. And this is clearly a time where people really need that. So yeah. Darren, thanks so much for coming on. I want to close with one segment. This is going to be a segment that we're going to close out each episode with, a segment that I don't have cool music to tee up. So I just have a slide that I'm going to pull up. It is one good thing. So it's easy to see tons of tragic, difficult, hard news. I know a lot of you that are watching this right now are probably experiencing your own hardship with your families, your extended family, or your own mental health and stress. It's a difficult time for everyone. And so, bad news finds us. I think we have to work a little harder to find good news. And so I'd like to end this particular broadcast with, tell me one good thing. It could be something that you've experienced personally, something you've read, something you saw, but what's one good thing from your life from the past week?
I think one good thing that's happened at GitLab is that Sid instituted a Friends and Family First Day. So on May 1st, we're going to just shut the company down. Everybody can just go have a long weekend for no other reason than we just feel like we need it. And it's the thing, it's something that we want to do. I think that's really encouraging. Giving people permission to put their focus on their friends and family in a time like this is really important. And I know for a lot of leaders that are trying to stabilize right now, thinking about anything other than work really isn't a priority, but it's one of those things that you need to maybe slow down to go fast. Don't be so caught up in just getting to the next day that you forget that you've got real people working with you and for you. And these people have real families and they're all going through something different. I've often heard that everyone's facing a battle you know nothing about. That is especially true right now. So I'm really encouraged to see this kind of not just at GitLab, but across other companies where people are being vocal and honest about, hey, these are unusual times. Let's destigmatize talking about it. And I think that's half the battle is just creating an atmosphere where we can talk about it and we can lean on each other's shoulder. We need community now more than ever across the world. And it's actually more possible to get to connected with community than ever before, thanks to things like this webcam that I'm looking into. So that's a good thing. I would encourage people to lean into that. Think about people that you could allow them to lean on your shoulder. Maybe you could use a shoulder to lean on. Reach out, find community, reconnect with people, reconnect with friends. And if this isn't happening at your organization, be the change. In the absence of leadership, lead and inject this into your company. My guess is that people will be hungry for this and they'll rally around it. We need some positivity like that. So there's nothing stopping you from bringing up something like that at your own company and making the change.
All right, Darren. Well, thanks so much. Thank you for being a willing guinea pig for the very first live episode of 21st Century HR. Real quick, for viewers that want to connect with you and stay in touch after the show, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, sure. I'm on Twitter @DarrenMurph, and I'm on Instagram @Darren_Murph.
All right. Well, folks, we're going to be back. This is a daily show. So we'll be back here tomorrow at noon with Hung Lee, the curator of Recruiting Brain Food. Huge fan of Hung, huge fan of his work. So he's going to take us inside his 24-hour Recruiting Brain Food Live marathon that he hosted last week with over 2,200 concurrent viewers. It was incredible. So I want to get under the hood and figure out how he pulled that off. So Darren, thanks so much, man. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Absolutely, Lars. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for letting me be the debut guest. I appreciate it. Godspeed, my friend.
All right, buddy. Everyone take care out there.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 21st Century HR. If you want to hear more episodes like this or read stories from the 21st Century HR Fast Company series, go to 21stcenturyhr.com. And if you want to make your podcast just a little more awesome, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or whatever podcast platform your ears desire. You'll find all the subscribe links on the website. And if you enjoy the podcast, do me a favor and share it with your peers, your network, your boss, and your CEO. Help me get the podcast into the ears of anyone who wants to know what HR and recruiting looks like when done really well. They'll thank you for it, and so will I. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode.